Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're very happy to be here with you all, taking part in our Easter courses again. Very, very nice experience. And very nice opportunity for all of us to share together in Krishna consciousness. We have a rather amusing chair. This is just where if anyone's falling asleep, we just do a trick on the chair and people will wake up. So we're going to be doing a course about the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy names. Just in case any of you are falling asleep already. Let me just say, oh, that's better. Okay, that'll do. That's good. Okay. 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy names. Hopefully you've all got this, do you? A copy of this overview, which we just put together rather quickly, actually. So today we're... Today, tomorrow, and Sunday, actually, the class times will be from about 12:30 till about 2:30, 2 hours, but in the middle we'll take 10 or 15 minute break. And then on Monday, actually I forget exactly what time it is, but it's at a different time. It's about 1:30 to 3 or something like that. Anyway, we'll make you aware of that. What is it, 11 to 1? 11 to 1, isn't it? 11:30 to 1, or something like that. So we'll be going through all 10 offenses, and then I believe you're meant to be having a test, am I right?
No.
Yes. Uh-huh. But anyway, the thing is that perhaps any of you who take the test will give you a prize just for doing it. Anyway, I'll tell you now what we're going to, at least a couple of things that we're going to ask you in the test about this, about our course here. And first thing, of course, naturally, we'll have to ask you what are the 10 offenses. So you must know what are the 10 offenses. And I would hope that you all know the 10 offenses already. Any of you who don't know the 10 offenses already? I see. Well, it's hard to avoid them if you don't know what they are. So, but this is so basic. This is a very basic thing. So that'll be there. And then, well, today we are going to particularly focus on the first offense, which is a very, very important offense and something which we actually talk about quite a bit. So we'll try and focus in on that. First offense, blaspheming the devotees. We'll do that today, and then the other days we'll go through the others. Now, as far as... So we'll ask you about the 10 offenses. What are the 10 offenses? And as far as what we're going to discuss today is concerned, we will... Anyway, as we go through, as we come across the points, I'll make you aware of them. The points that we're going to ask questions about in the test, but there'll just be a couple. They'll be very easy. So, the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy names, we all know, you all know very well, that in this age of Kali, that Hari Naam, Hari Naam, Hari Naam Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. That in this age of Kali, there's no other way, no other way, no other way than chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names. No other way to go back to Godhead. So that is well known to all of us. That is the Yuga Dharma. And Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, has appeared to teach that, to demonstrate it. Very important. Most important, actually, without chanting the holy names, without actually having the chanting of the holy names as the focal point of your spiritual activities, then there can hardly be any advancement for anyone. So in other sampradayas or other traditions like this, where generally they're not actually chanting the holy names very much, then we can understand that not really very much advancement that they can make. So this chanting of the holy names is so important. And Srila Prabhupada, whenever he would give first initiation, and of course the practice continues nowadays also, he would always talk about the 10 offenses, how the chanting of the holy names is so important, so valuable, that if you commit offenses, then Prabhupada would say, he said different things. One thing was that it's like trying to light a fire with one hand while pouring water on it with the other. Yes, if you're chanting, trying to focus on your chanting, but you're committing offenses, then it's like that. So to understand these offenses and know them very clearly and to know something about them, different aspects of how they may occur in our lives, how we may commit them, and what to do about them if we somehow or other unfortunately do. So these are very important considerations in Krishna consciousness. They have a very big effect. Just to give you an idea, you've probably heard the story, I'm sure you've heard the story before, of the devotees who are staying in Hawaii, and they had had certain experiences dealing with the administration of ISKCON, and they felt they'd had bad experiences, they felt they'd been mistreated, and they weren't prepared to be tolerant or try again like that. So they came to Srila Prabhupada and told Srila Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, we like you so much, we're very attached to you, we'll do anything that you ask. You've heard this story, haven't you? You've heard this story. We'll do anything. You just tell us, we'll do anything. We'll follow you. But these GBC members, this GBC body, no, sorry. We just can't do it. We tried, but we can't. So Srila Prabhupada, ever clever, said that, oh, well, that's very nice. You'll do whatever I say? Yes, Srila Prabhupada, we'll do anything. Just order us. And Srila Prabhupada said then, all right, then just follow the GBC. And you've all heard that before, but it's very, like, one of the very important stories there. So anyway, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. And they went out, and then it became clear after a few days that they were not intending to do that. But they were still around. Actually, they had their own ashram. They had even separated themselves to that extent. They had their own ashram. So it became clear that they were not going to obey that order. So a few days later, Srila Prabhupada was having his morning walk on one of the beaches there in Hawaii, and the subject came up about these people and what they were doing and what was their position. And one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that you've given these devotees a clear order, but now they've disobeyed that order. So we all know that this is the, which offense is that? Don't look. Third. Okay. That's the third offense. Guror avagya, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. So this devotee then asked Srila Prabhupada that these people, that they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're devotees, and at least they're continuing, basically continuing as devotees, but they're disobeying this order of yours, Srila Prabhupada, so What will be the result? Will they be able to become Krishna conscious? Srila Prabhupada, and will they be able to make any advancement? Srila Prabhupada said, well, maybe after 400 lifetimes. It's a long time. So here we have one order from Srila Prabhupada, but they were disobeying that order. It's an important order, of course. And on the basis of this disobeying this one order, Srila Prabhupada felt that, he not just felt, but he said that, pointed out that it would have such a drastic effect on their lives in Krishna consciousness. So these are big things, these offenses, and to avoid them is very, very important. Let us read through here, just the first page, as a little introduction, and then we'll go on to discussing about the first offense. So we have taken a quotation out of Nectar of Devotion. This is out of the 8th chapter. Srila Prabhupada says, in the Padma Purana it is stated that even a person whose life is completely sinful will be completely protected by the Lord if he simply surrenders unto him. So it is accepted that one who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes free from all sinful reactions. And even when a person becomes an offender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can still be delivered simply by taking shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now just a little point before you read this last sentence here. When Srila Prabhupada says here that even when a person becomes an offender unto the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead himself, he can still be delivered by chanting, Srila Prabhupada is speaking in a certain context, that is the context of the 8th chapter of Nectar of Devotion. Who can tell us what the 8th chapter of Nectar of Devotion is about? Anyway, we need to do a bit more reading, perhaps. It's called Offenses to be Avoided. Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada, first of all, lists out a whole list, actually two lists of offenses, which we call Seva Aparadha. Offenses you may commit in the course of rendering devotional service. Beginning with, who knows what the first of such offenses is? Anyone know? Dhanaja. Well, to enter the temple room with your shoes on. Yeah. Or riding in a palanquin. So, this is the first of those Seva Aparadhas. And they're considered to be offenses in service, but in service to who? Of course, in service to Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada says here that even when a person becomes an offender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he's referring to those Seva Aparadhas. Even if someone commits some offense like that, you know, there's so many, and we're not going to really look at them very much, but you may be aware of some we've just mentioned. Entering the temple room with your shoes on. When you enter the temple room, if you bow down, but don't bow down properly. Panchanga. Obeisances and Ashtanga. Obeisances where five parts of your body touch the ground, and obeisances where eight parts of your body touch the ground. In other words, when you kneel down or you prostrate yourself offering dandanats. So if you don't bow down properly, it's an offense. If when you bow down you don't utter the pranam mantras to your spiritual master out loud, if you just say them in your mind or just whisper them, then this is also an offense. And there's so many offenses listed out there. There's something like 60, 64, something like that. So then at the end of listing out all those seva aparadhas, Srila Prabhupada makes this point, that even if you become an offender to Krishna in this sense, that if you chant Hare Krishna, then you can be delivered. So then let's just read on. In other words, the chanting of Hare Krishna is beneficial for eradicating all sins. But if one becomes an offender to the holy names of the Lord, then he has no chance of being delivered. So we all want to be delivered. No one wants to stay here in the material world and rot. Of course, some of us may feel that we have the sentiment we would be willing to come back and preach. So that, you know, that may be there, but that's a pretty elevated type of desire. And if you read that book by Burijan Prabhu, My Glorious Master, you'll see that he, Prabhupada, was talking about going back to Godhead. And Burijan Prabhu, he offered a little sort of few words of sentiment. He said, actually, Srila Prabhupada, we'd like to stay here and preach on your behalf. And Srila Prabhupada, understanding it was a bit of a sentiment, it wasn't so deep. Srila Prabhupada, without asking him, well, you know, what's going to happen to you if you stay here? Are you going to preach or end up in Maya? Prabhupada just looked at him and said, don't make your spiritual master come back for you. Yeah. So we all want to be delivered. And Srila Prabhupada is saying here that if you commit these offenses in the chanting of Hare Krishna, then you cannot be delivered. So therefore I think it's very important, isn't it, to get a grip on these 10 offenses and particularly to avoid committing them. Some of you will have heard me tell the story. I was present once with Srila Prabhupada when one devotee read out to Srila Prabhupada this very thing that we have just read now. This very bit. He read it out to Srila Prabhupada. It was in a darshan in Prabhupada's room in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, it says here like this, that if you offend the holy names, then there's no chance of being delivered. But isn't there some way of being delivered? And Srila Prabhupada looked at him and said, you are asking this question because you want to offend. It was very heavy. It was actually about the heaviest thing I've ever seen in my personal presence with Srila Prabhupada. The other heaviest thing, which may have actually been, which was heavier, was when the temple president of the Edinburgh Temple in Scotland asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, we have rats in our building. Is it all right if we kill them? And Srila Prabhupada replied that if you kill the rats, then you should be killed. And the devotee didn't hear. This was in a room like something like as many devotees or more than we have here in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And the devotee didn't really grasp it. He said, excuse me, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that if you kill the rats, then you should be killed. And then there was a characteristic deep silence. So something similar happened here. We were all sitting there enjoying Srila Prabhupada's association. But Srila Prabhupada was not one to be sentimental and just get into a certain mood and joke around or, you know, casual mood. So when this question came up, he was very heavy. He said, if you are asking this question because you want to offend. You must stop offending. No more offenses. No more offenses. So this is very, very important. Let's just read through the offenses. I'm sure we all basically know them, but just for our purification. Let's read them together out loud, okay? As we do in the temple every morning. The 10 offenses in the chanting of Hare Krishna are as follows. 1. To blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. 2. To consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. 3. To disobey the orders of the spiritual master. 4. To blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. 5. To consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. 6. To give some interpretation of the holy name of the Lord. 7. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name of the Lord. 8. To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna, one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruit of activities, karma kanda. 9. To instruct the faithless person about the glories of the holy name. 10. To not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, and to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. It is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. Every devotee who claims to be a Vaishnava must guard against these offenses in order to quickly achieve the desired success. Krishna prayer. Yes. So there you have the 10 offenses, and you please learn those for the test. And let's turn over now. And today we're going to discuss about this first offense. To blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. And here you see we have given 5 little subheadings, and of course there's so many different subheadings and different aspects to this, and we'll try and cover as many as we reasonably can before 2:30 today. So first point we've brought out is how Krishna himself, speaking to Uddhava, in the 11th canto, this is called the Uddhava Gita. Just like we've got Bhagavad Gita, we've got Uddhava Gita. Bhagavad Gita, we all know Bhagavad Gita, of course, it's very, very important. Uddhava Gita is also spoken by Krishna, it's there in the 11th canto, and it's said to be a higher development than the Bhagavad Gita. Perhaps not many of you have read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, but this Uddhava Gita is very important in the 11th canto. Many, many chapters, Krishna explains devotional service more the intricacies of devotional service. And then there's even the Gopi Gita, which is, of course, very short. It's actually just part of a chapter in the 10th canto, which is an even higher development, the gopis expressing their transcendental feelings about Krishna. But here, Krishna himself explains the qualities of a devotee. I'll just read through it quickly. O Uddhava, a saintly person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are aggressive, he's tolerant and forgiving toward all living entities. His strength and meaning in life come from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress. Thus he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. His intelligence is never bewildered by material desires, and he has controlled his senses. His behavior is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary, and he is free from possessiveness. He never endeavors in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. He therefore always remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in the execution of his duties, and is never subject to superficial transformations, because he is steady and noble, even in distressing situations. even in a distressing situation. He's conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. He is free from all desire for prestige and offers honor to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna consciousness of others and therefore never cheats anyone. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. So that is about four verses from the 11th chapter of the 11th canto. The devotee is the best of all people because the devotee possesses the highest qualities. But, or even really amongst those qualities, the main quality is being attached to Krishna. And Krishna appreciates this quality so much that this is what this first offense really is related to. How the holy name of the Lord is actually Krishna himself. And the devotees are very dear to Krishna. Extremely dear. So if you offend a devotee, you offend Krishna. It's very, very serious. You cannot get Krishna's mercy if you offend a devotee. Now, of course, the question might arise, offending a devotee. We will, as we have done in previous years, after just warming up slightly. I can see you're all warming up because the room's getting warm. So, and some of you are already falling asleep. So we will get up and walk around a little and wave our arms around a little, get a little excited and try and get you all a little excited. Okay, so the devotees are very dear to Krishna. And, of course, the pure devotees are particularly dear to Krishna. Very dear to Krishna. But what about the other devotees? When we hear about this first offense to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives, what sort of devotees are we talking about? Are we talking about the pure devotees? Or the sort of medium pure devotees? Or which devotees are we talking about? What do you think? All. We're talking about all the devotees. This applies to all the devotees, down to the very last one that you could consider a devotee by, you know, just using your imagination a little bit. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a very graphic example of this. At least in the sense of someone who was, you know, you really had to use your imagination a bit to consider this person a devotee. But this person was definitely accepted by Krishna and got some real mercy that we'd all like to get. So can you think who I might be talking about? Who might I be talking about? Oh, yeah, very good. Putana. Putana. Now, in order to consider Putana a devotee, I think you have to use your imagination a bit. Yes. Because in the Bhagavatam, when Uddhava, who is the person who really acknowledges this fact that Putana was a devotee, or at least she was dear to Krishna because she was something of a devotee. He refers to her as Asadvi. Sadvi is the feminine form of sadhu. We have here the sadhus and the sadvis, like the prabhus. I know we have this practice in ISKCON of the prabhus and the matajis. But actually it's the prabhu, strictly speaking, the prabhus and the prabhis. Yes. Anyway, I don't know if that's going to be introduced. But it's technically correct Sanskrit. Or more correct, at least. Extremely horrible. And she wanted to kill Krishna by sucking his blood out. Oh, no, by poisoning him. She put poison on her breasts. And she was ostensibly going to breastfeed him, but actually she wanted to poison him. And she was, in fact, a professional killer of children, perhaps a forerunner of the modern-day abortionists. But she did it in a more colorful form. Yes, she sucked their blood out. A modern, or not modern-day, but, you know, perhaps a forerunner of Dracula and company. So that was Putana. She was Asadvi. She was just the most horrible person you can imagine. But Uddhava, there's famous verse, and the importance of it was brought to our attention by Jiva Goswami in a book called Sankalpa Kalpa Druma, in which he raises the question, why should we surrender to Krishna? And he suggests a number of possible reasons, because Krishna's God and we're his parts and parcels, and these are very logical reasons like this, good reasons. But then he says, no, that's not really the ultimate reason, at least. And he says the ultimate reason is because Krishna is so merciful to his devotees, then he refers to Putana, and he quotes this verse that I'm referring to. Aho bahiyam stanakala kutam jigramshaya payayad api asadvi. That he's lamenting, Krishna had left the planet, and he's lamenting that, aho, alas, alas, what will I do now? Who will I take shelter of now that Krishna's left this planet? Who will I take shelter of? And he says, Krishna, how will I find someone like Krishna who can give me shelter and look after me and be kind to me? Like Krishna, who gave the position of mother to Putana. Yes, Daitri. Daitri means nurse. Lord Krishna gave Putana, killed her, gave her a position in Goloka Vrindavan as his own personal nurse. So this is pretty amazing, that Putana, even though she only had a little hint of piety or Krishna consciousness, in that she came to breastfeed Krishna. Probably you've heard us explain before about Putana. In her previous life she was the sister or daughter, different Puranas say different things, but intimate relative of Bali Maharaj. And when Lord Vamana came, he was a very beautiful looking little boy, 5-year-old boy, and she as a young lady, young girl, she saw this beautiful little boy and she thought, so wonderful, what a beautiful child, I wish I could have this boy as my son. She was sort of daydreaming like that, because he was such a nice little boy. But then Lord Vamana took everything away from Bali Maharaj, and his sister got upset. And she said that, all right, perhaps I'll have this child as my son, but if I do, then I'll kill him. So then she was born as Putana. And so she tried to. She got this position where she was apparently in a maternal type of position, or coming to do a maternal type of thing
to breastfeed Krishna, but she tried to kill him. However, Krishna, recognizing that little trace of maternal feeling, positive feeling, little trace of affection, then Krishna killed her and overlooked all the horrible thoughts in her mind and gave her a position in Goloka Vrindavan as a nurse, which means it is in the parental rasa. It's a motherly position. So from this we can get some idea of how dear the devotees are to Krishna. If she was dear enough, despite everything, despite so much, to get a position in Goloka Vrindavan, then what about the devotees who are, you know, despite having shortcomings, are actually trying their best? What about that? The same point comes up in the story of Ajamil, which we're discussing in Bhagavatam class in the temple here in Durban. That Ajamil, he chanted the name Narayan, and of course it's a bit of a long story, but he also went back to Godhead. He got some special mercy. So right at the end of the narration about Ajamil, Shukadev Goswami makes the point that if Ajamil eventually went back to Godhead, if Ajamil got that sort of mercy from the Lord, then what about a devotee who is seriously trying to practice Krishna consciousness? Because you all know Ajamil. He was far from your average practitioner of sadhana bhakti. Yeah. So the devotees are very dear to Krishna. And we've just given these two examples to illustrate that, you know, by contrast, if these two people who are like utter creeps, and that's praising them, you know, they were just too much altogether, you know, long ago. But they had some little trace somewhere of something to do with Krishna in a little bit of a favorable way. You could hardly even notice it. But they went back to Godhead. Yeah. So what about your average, you know, we don't want to mention any names, but anyone sitting in the room here, we don't want to embarrass anyone, create a scene. But, yeah. In fact, I remember sitting in one class once, and one devotee was talking about this and how he, actually it was Pradyumna, who was at one point Srila Prabhupada's Sanskrit assistant type. Unfortunately, he got kind of deviated after a while, but he was saying he was with Srila Prabhupada once, and and Prabhupada was giving a class, and Srila Prabhupada was making a point, a similar type of point. He said, you never know who you're going to be sitting next to. It might be Narada Muni. So, anyway, we don't really expect that exactly, but at least you should know that we don't have any Ajamils here. We certainly don't have any Putanas, right? We don't have any Ajamils. We've basically got here devotees who are trying their best, even though I know that probably any one of you would be able to say that you have shortcomings, and it's probably true, actually. That's just the way it goes in the material world. But all the devotees are very dear to Krishna. And I got a couple of quotes here from, spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says, this is in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth chapter. It's a story of Devasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. Hopefully you're familiar with that story. But Devasa Muni, he really offended Maharaj Ambarish through being puffed up and thinking he was more, you know, like had more value than he really had. So he said, Sadavo, or rather Lord Vishnu said, Sadavo Hridayam Mayam sadhunam hridayam tvaham madanyate na jananti naham tevyo managapi. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I'm always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I don't know anyone else but them. The devotees mean a lot to Krishna. You know, if Putana meant something, then just consider someone like Maharaj Ambarish. Krishna saying, I don't know anything else. I don't know anything else. He says, there's a whole dialogue here. He says that without my devotees, I don't even care for Vaikuntha. I don't care for all my mystic opulences. I don't care for anything without my devotees. Then he makes another interesting point, which is related to the sort of Putana and or the, you know, neophyte devotee type person. I'm completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I'm not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the cause of their hearts. So that's the pure devotees. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. So we're just mentioning these things because first thing to understand when we consider this offense of blaspheming the devotees is to have an idea within our minds that of how special the devotees are. And even, you know, the quote-unquote ordinary devotee who may be sitting right next to you at this very instant, you know, that devotee who you've seen around, yeah, that devotee who comes to the temple every Sunday and, you know, is one of the devotees, but, you know, when you see that devotee, it's not that you snap to attention and you're on your best behavior or anything of that sort. It's just one of the devotees, and it's Hari Bol, Prabhu, or Mataji, or whatever. But, you know, don't take these people lightly. Don't take these people lightly. Because if you do, anyway, Krishna doesn't. He doesn't at all. He really doesn't. And this is the essence of the significance of this offense. Yeah. That the devotees are very, very, first of all, qualified. Krishna said to Uddhava in the verse there, which you have in the overview book, actually they're very qualified in many ways. But even if they're not so qualified, like Putana or Ajamil, but just because there's a little bit there, then Krishna takes them very seriously. What to speak of someone who's trying? Someone who's trying their best, despite having been conditioned and having shortcomings. You must know, Krishna takes these people very, very seriously. So therefore, to commit offenses against the devotees is very serious. Okay, now let us go a little bit into some of the intricacies of it. You'll see in your overview book, point number two is talking about two different types of qualities. Now, it might not be so clear what it really means. But what we mean here is that, like in these four verses we've just quoted here, spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, there's a whole lot of qualities mentioned. And in a classic sense, or at least we hear Prabhupada talks sometimes about the devotees having 26 qualities. Have you heard about that? The 26 qualities of the devotees. Yeah. So that's there. And amongst those 26, there are two types. And the Sanskrit term, well, let me just write it up, because we're going to ask you this in our test, okay? So write this down, all right? Some of you may be familiar with these terms, because we've discussed this subject quite a lot. Swarup Lakshana and Tatastha Lakshana. Swarup means constitutional or essential, and Tatastha means marginal. We are the Tatastha Shakti of Krishna. Tatastha means marginal. It means it's there, it's important, but it's not so, you know, not totally essential. So amongst the 26 qualities of the devotee, or amongst the qualities like mentioned here in the verses that we've quoted, so there's Swarup and Tatastha. Swarup, constitutional or essential, and Tatastha or marginal. Lakshana. Lakshana means qualities. Now, are any of you, you're familiar with these 26 qualities? Are you familiar? Sort of. I'm sure you're at least sort of, somewhat, kind of, familiar. That's the way we are about many things, actually, in Krishna consciousness, or in life even. We're kind of, yes, right. We've heard about it. So, now, do you kind of know, or even definitely know, what is or are the Swarup Lakshana, the essential qualities, or quality, or whatever it may be, of a devotee, out of the 36? Any offers? Vishnananda Prabhu. Krishna, Krishna Eka Sharana. Oh, there you go. That's really, you got it. Krishna Eka Sharana. That the devotee only takes shelter of Krishna. The devotee doesn't take shelter of any demigods, family members, you know, the nation, the government, your bank balance, your mother-in-law. Krishna. No, the devotee takes shelter of Krishna. Then there are many others. So this is the one Swarup Lakshana, and we want you to know this, okay? That the devotee takes shelter only of Krishna. This is the Swarup Lakshana. This is the essential quality of a devotee. Then the other 25, they're all Tatastha, they're all marginal qualities, like being humble, being tolerant, being poetic, being grave, being friendly to all living entities. They're marginal. They're important. They shouldn't be neglected. But they're not as important. They're not as important. Yeah. Then, in our book, we refer, number four, I'm just going to skip over to number four, we'll also talk about number three shortly. But number four, we mention about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. So let us, it actually fits in here. His explanation is, this is in Madhurya Kadamani, that even if a devotee is really lacking in the 25 marginal qualities, not so humble, not so tolerant, not so poetic, not so friendly to all living entities, not so grave, like this, but the devotee is really attached to Krishna, then we accept them as a devotee, and even though they're lacking in the other qualities, we don't really make a big thing of it. It's not a big issue. Of course, if the devotee, sort of something really flares up in some way, you know, they really become angry or really become proud, or, you know, instead of being friendly to other living entities, they start punching other living entities, particularly the devotees, then we would have to take it seriously and really note it. But otherwise, we don't make a big issue. We don't make a big issue. Generally, we overlook. We would prefer to overlook. Yeah. However, even if the devotee is extremely humble and meek, what some devotees call, Bhakti Vrinda Govinda Maharaj calls, a humble bumblebee. A humble bumblebee. Very, very humble and simple and quiet and tolerate anything. I know one devotee, nice devotee, I just saw him in Mayapur after not seeing him for years. Such a humble devotee. One of our devotees, we were on traveling Sankirtan, and one of the devotees was sitting in the van, looking out the window, and he felt the need to expectorate, if you know what that means, to spit some mucus built up. And so it's rather gross, but anyway. So he felt he just really had to do it, so he went out the window and spat. And just at that very instant, you know, I'm serious, just at that very instant, this humble devotee walked past Rish and he got spat on. And you know what he did? He said, "Oh, I'm very sorry, Prabhu. The devotee you got spat on. I'm very sorry, Prabhu." Yeah. He's a very humble devotee. Yeah. Actually, I don't know if you're aware, but if you have, I think it's a cold, some sort of disease, we could check up on it. But if a Brahmin gargles with water and then spits on you, that is meant to be a cure. Or I believe it's a cold. Yeah. Anyway, what we're getting at though is that even if a devotee is very humble and tolerant and sweet and nice and everything like that, but they're not really devotees, in other words. You know, they're not really devotees, they're not really attached to Krishna. They're materialistic. So a person, I should say, not a devotee, but a person who may be very humble and tolerant and so on and so forth, but not a devotee, then we don't care. I mean, we don't take them seriously, put it that way. We don't take them seriously. Yeah. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation is that you may come across one of these people, one of these devotees, who's attached to Krishna, very attached to Krishna, but is not so humble. You know, if you tell them, if you ask them to move out of the way, they'll tell you, "Why don't you move out of the way?" Anyway, you know, one of these just difficult devotees. Yeah. One of these difficult devotees, who may actually be really difficult. Just to give you an example. Well, I don't know if this is a good example, but it's an example. It's a very interesting example in regard to, you know, being a very advanced devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati once, he was doing a lecture tour somewhere in India, going from town to town doing programs. And at the end of one program, at the end of the class, he asked if there were any questions, and one man got up and asked a question. I don't know actually what it was about, but it was like a really, it was just a challenge. It was a criticism. You know, why do you people do this? Why do you do that? That sort of thing. But in a really cynical and unpleasant way. And at the end, you know, at the end of a very nice program, for this to come up, you know, everyone felt very sad, actually. It spoiled the mood. It was a pleasant mood prevailing. But everyone became disturbed. So anyway, then the program ended and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta went on to the next town. And the next night had a program in the next town. And They ask the questions, and who should stand up but the same man with another, you know, unpleasant, cynical, you know, sort of like aggressive and nasty question. And then the next day, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta went to the next town and did a program that next night, and the same thing happened. This man was following him. He was actually following him. And he was uptight and angry. So this went on for a couple of weeks. And every night, and the devotees was telling Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, next time he stands up, we'll just chuck him out. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, no, it's all right, it's all right. Finally, after about 2 or 3 weeks or something like that, the man wasn't there one night. And the devotees breathed a sigh of relief. And so anyway, things were going on. Then about 2 or 3 days later, they heard the man was dead. So they thought, great, that's wonderful, just what he deserves. And they went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and they told him the good news, so to speak, that, you know, that fellow from a little while ago, well, he's dead. And they were laughing, you know, they thought this was actually quite amusing. He really got what he deserved. But then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he started crying. And the devotees, you know, they're just wondering what really is happening there. So should they ask Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that, you know, this man, he was such a demon, such an envious rascal. And isn't it good? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta cried, he said, no, he was my friend. He was trying to help me. So, anyway, very advanced devotee, very, very elevated devotee, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And the point we're getting at here is that, oh gosh, I better take a break here. But the point is that even if a devotee is really lacking, they're just like, you know, one of these rather painful devotees, if you happen to know one, who at least might be painful to you. But, you know, every now and then you get to be sort of like the black sheep, the sore thumb type devotee who just, yeah. But as long as they're attached to Krishna, then you cannot think that, oh, I can now criticize this devotee, blaspheme this devotee. And it's all right because, you know, just look at him. He, you know, always says the wrong things, and he's dirty, he insults other devotees, and so on and so forth. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation is that as long as he is attached to Krishna, you cannot justify criticizing like this. You cannot justify that just by pointing out that the devotee has shortcomings in regard to the tatastha lakshana, the marginal qualities. That does not justify. So one should always be respectful to the devotees. Okay, I'm sorry, we should have taken a break 15 minutes ago, but anyway, let us take a break now, okay? What time do you have? What is ML?